WXCO 1230 AM, W255DN Wausau. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Brief. The tariff war is in full swing. Canada is retaliating, and so is Europe. European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen says she wishes it wasn't so.
They are bad for business and worse for consumers. They are disrupting supply chains. They bring uncertainty for the economy.
Caitlin Huey Burns on the Education Department cutting half its workforce.
The agency says that they will continue to service core programs of the department. But this is also making clear this is the first step of dismantling this agency.
President Trump has fired the head of the National Endowment for the Humanities. The head of the EPA has announced he's rolling back landmark environmental regulations. And a district judge heard more than 6 hours of arguments today in a challenge to the Defense Department banning transgender people from serving in the military. CBS News Brief, I'm Cammie McCormick.
I'm Brittany Merlot with WXCO News. Your news in depth. Find it in the news section on the WXCO website at BullFallsRadio.com. For WXCO News, I'm Brittany Merlot. The Wausau City Council overrode Mayor Doug Dinney's veto of a resolution expressing support for programs like Medicaid and Medicare. Mayor Doug Dinney said he's not opposed to the programs, but he doesn't think it is in the city's place to speak on such topics. Alders thought differently and said it is the city's business. The resolution states that 23% of Marathon County residents rely on Medicaid and that the program is an important funding source for mental health care in the city. Tuesday's vote was 9-0. The measure now goes back to Mayor Dinney's desk, and if he doesn't sign it, it can still take effect. And Governor Tony Evers has unveiled a capital budget he calls a critical step to address aging infrastructure. Joanne Krulatz tells us more.
With a $4.3 billion price tag, the Democratic governor's proposal includes nearly $1.6 billion for projects on universities of Wisconsin campuses and more than $493 million for cost of his previously announced plan to overhaul Wisconsin's correction system. Evers on Tuesday warned that putting off the projects could drive up the final cost amid President Donald Trump's push for tariffs. But the Republican co-chairs of the legislature's Joint Finance Committee, Senator Howard Markline and Representative Mark Bourne, quickly called the plan another example of Evers' quote, irresponsible spending.
And two-time congressional candidate Rebecca Cook is running again for Wisconsin's 3rd District. Cook, a Democrat, lost to Republic Derek Van Orden last fall by nearly 3 percentage points, but outperformed Democrats Kamala Harris and Tammy Baldwin on the ballot. She previously ran for the seat in 2022, losing in the primary to Brad Pfaff. Cook is the first person to announce their candidacy to challenge Van Orden. Eau Claire City Council President Emily Burge is also considering a run for Congress. I'm Brittany Merlot for WXCO.
The Bucks lose at the buzzer. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Bucks had the lead, but Oshkosh native Tyrese Haliburton with a spectacular three-point shot, then draws a foul, gave the Pacers a 115-114 win over Milwaukee. Doc Rivers.
That's on us. I told our staff, you know, we got to have our guys prepared better for that. You can see screaming before the play. We're already off the bodies, so we're in trouble before the play started.
The Bucks have now lost 3 in a row. College hoops. For the second year in a row, the UW Green Bay women's team winning the Horizon League tournament. They beat Purdue Fort Wayne 77-63. The Phoenix now headed to the NCAA tournament. The Badgers men play tomorrow in the second round of the Big Ten tournament. Greg Gard says his team has put that loss at home to Penn State behind them.
So one nice thing about younger adults, they move on faster than a 50-some-year-old head coach does.
NFL cornerback Eric Stokes leaving the Packers, signing a one-year deal with the Las Vegas Raiders. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Partly cloudy tonight, low upper 20s. Mostly sunny and even warmer tomorrow, highs low 60s. Chance of showers and storms Friday, high around 70. Windy, rain to snow, and falling temps Saturday. Sun, breezy, and a high in the upper 30s only Sunday. Right now it's 48.
On Wednesday night, join Jeff Gress and myself, Chad Holmes, at a special time of 7 to 9 p.m. for the Big High School Sports Show presented by K5 Construction on 98.9 WXCO, online at WXCO.FM. Mobile devices and Alexa by searching WXCO and on the Civic Media app. Jeff and I will be talking high school sports. Last week, it was the hockey state tournament. This week, it's the girls state tournament and the boys basketball sectionals coming up this weekend. Plus special guests. At 7:25, we'll talk to Marshfield boys basketball coach Chris Fisher as the Tigers get set for their sectional semifinal on Thursday night. Then at 8:06, it's our student athlete guest from the Wausau East Lumberjacks, senior Charlie Kalin. Lumberjacks also getting set for a sectional against New Richmond on Thursday. The big high school sports show at a special time, Wednesday from 7 till 9 p.m. on 98.9 WXCO, online at WXCO.FM. Mobile devices and Alexa by searching WXCO and on the Civic Media app.
Teach Schwaba.
Our next live broadcast is Thursday, where I welcome Mary Mack, who will make the popcorn pick of the week. And then comedian Rob Brackenridge joins me in the studio. Always fun.
Nightlight with Pete Schwaba. Weeknights from 6 till 8. This is Bull Falls Radio, WXCO.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Broadcasting across the state of Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network and around the world on the Civic Media app, this is the Dom Salvia Show. And now, here's your host, Dom Salvia.
And welcome to the Dom Salvia Show. Thank you for tuning in and listening. You can also be a part, 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. Got Jess P.S. working hard on the board and the sound, which we're going to get to today. Also, Matt Rothschild joining me until 6 o'clock. We're going to wrap this whole show up at 5:50 with Tell Us Something Good. You know the drill. We end the day on a positive note, so join us for that as well. Matt, Donald Trump spoke for an historic 100 minutes yesterday, and I was traveling, so I didn't get a chance to see it or hear it live, but I know you did.
It was agonizing. It was excruciating.
Why was it
100 minutes of my life I'm never getting back?
We do have some sound we're going to highlight.
Supreme Court, but first, we're going to have a little bit of fun here. As for those watching in the hall, you might hear some applause, hopefully not some boos. But Pat Kreitlow is in the house, so yeah, he has lots of fans here in the house. For those listening,
for applause.
Look at that. Fantastic.
I want to thank the folks at the radio station for bringing up the applause sound effect.
For those of us listening across the Civic Media Radio Network, we want to thank Civic Media for hosting this event tonight, because I think it's just so important to have these discussions in long form, as they say in broadcasting, not in the little snippets that are being advertised, 30-second sound bites or pamphlets at the door or on our smartphones or whatever, but actual real conversation. So to all of our folks across Wisconsin, on all 11 news talk stations, from the shores of Green Bay to the shores of Lake Michigan, Green Bay to the Mississippi River, and all points in between. My name's Todd Alba. I host a little program on Civic Media between noon and 2 every day. But really, the person that got this all started is my friend and colleague. He is the host of Up North News Radio every morning on Civic Media between 6 and 8. He is also the founder, one of the co-founders of the Courier News Service, and of course, of Up North News Radio, Mr. Pat Kreitlow. Pat, good evening to
you. Thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. Alba. Let's introduce our third moderator here, Mr. Schaefer. He's a very vital part of this team.
Absolutely. We're happy to have him. You might know him as a person that, when you might feel a little discombobulated, he recombobulates you. He is the founder of the great news source, the Recombobulation Area, and also now we're proud to say our political editor here at Civic Media, Mr. Dan Schaefer. Dan, how are you?
I'm doing well, Todd. Thanks so much for having me. Thanks, Pat, for having me join this wonderful event you're all putting.
I always feel better. I feel more combobulated once you're here.
That's what I aim to do. It's a very, very discombobulating time, is it not?
It really is.
And we're going to try to discombobulate or recombobulate a little bit of it for you here. So again, our thanks to Civic Media for helping provide broadcasting for this, the first ever live event for Up North News. Up North News is a separate entity from Civic Media. Courier Newsroom is our parent company with outlets in 10-plus states right now that help to try to make state and especially political news approachable to audiences who may not be regular blog readers and podcast listeners and somebody that still feels newsprint in their hands, on Sunday mornings. But these are still important issues, and we want to try to explain the issues to folks. And it occurred to us with this state Supreme Court race happening on April 1st that this was a perfect opportunity to hold our first live event, bring in some experts, bring in some lawmakers, bring in some trusted voices, break it down into three major areas, and then find out what our guests think about that in terms of the significance of the race. With an open seat on the state Supreme Court, which is what this is all about, which will decide control of the court by liberals or conservatives, in these three areas, there can be just a tremendous sea change. I'm going to be hosting the third panel, moderating the third panel, I should say, which will be about reproductive rights. You probably don't need me to say much about that, but our experts are going to have a lot to say about that because, again, who shows up on election day truly determines the course of reproductive rights in the state. Dan's going to have the second panel, so let's have you say just a bit about the economy and the people that you're going to be talking to during the course of today's event.
Yeah, we've got a great panel. We're going to be talking a little bit about how this election will have an impact on the economy and on working people, everyday people here in the state of Wisconsin. You know, you don't always think of a judicial election necessarily as having a connection to the economy, but so many of the decisions that are made by the state Supreme Court do have an impact on so many different aspects of our economy right now, and it's never been more important as we've seen. To have some good checks and balances seems pretty important right about now. I don't know, for a variety
balances.
Of reasons.
Yeah,
checks, balances. I don't know. We haven't heard that much about that.
No, it's really just been about checks and the ones that a billionaire is writing. But we'll get to that. And then the first panel of the evening will be about education. And Todd, you'll be moderating that one.
Yeah, looking forward to it. I come from a family of educators, so it's something near and dear to my heart. But more importantly, we have some wonderful folks, and we'll introduce them here in a moment. And you've curated a great panel in that we have somebody from the legal side, because I think there are so many legal questions, obviously, the Supreme Court race. And people say, well, what in the world does a Supreme Court race outcome have to do with education? Well, it turns out quite a lot in terms of protecting students' rights and protecting educators' rights. And then there was a little something that I'm not sure if you remember, Pat, Act 10.
I'm somewhat familiar, yes.
So we'll talk about that.
Okay. So much that we're going to cover in those three topic areas. We hope you find it very informative. Josh Clemens, come on up for a second. We want to visit with you as well because, well, we're talking to experts in their field and lawmakers. There's also no shortage of people who communicate about politics through all sorts of ways. I mean, it used to be it was just, either you were a TV anchor or a radio reporter, you were an ink stained wretch in a newspaper someplace. But now there are these things called influencers and content creators and podcasters. And Josh, you have just a little bit of experience in digital communications, so thanks for joining us for a couple of moments to talk about this.
Thanks so much for having me. Yeah, I'm very honored to get to speak to a lot of people every day about what's going on in Wisconsin politics. Anybody here on TikTok? Anybody here recognize me?
We should connect. Absolutely. It's radio and not to raise their hands, but that's okay.
There's a crowd here, and they all raise their hands.
That's it. There.
And those at home Theater should also line. Be raising their hands. So I work in politics. I have the honor of working with a lot of amazing progressives throughout Wisconsin and nationally, but I also spend a lot of time talking directly to voters and potential voters on TikTok, and that is where a lot of my energy these days seems to go, because every year we have another existential race that we have to win or democracy dies, and that is something that I am unfortunately perennially focused on, as are all of you, I am sure. It's exhausting. It's not how this is supposed to work, but here we are, and we've got another one next year that we have to win, and another one the year after that, so it just keeps on going and going, but yeah, happy to talk about it.
Well, the whole notion behind this is to not take democracy for granted, something I never thought we'd have to say in our lifetimes. But for a while now, that's something we ignore at our peril. And it's one thing for, let's say Dan writes a 1,000-word column for the recombobulation area.
So Todd, one on the short end.
Yes, yeah. Todd's got 2 hours every day on radio, as do I. But in TikTok, I mean, you've got to make that point quickly, or people are scrolling right to the next thing. So can you talk just a bit about the challenge and the importance of reaching people who may not be subscribing to any of those typical political sites? They're on TikTok. what can you say? How can you get that attention about the importance of this race in short order?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, first of all, anybody who's out there trying to do this on social, anywhere, it doesn't matter if it's TikTok or otherwise, remember that you're talking to a lot of people who don't know the facts, and that's okay. Like, there's no shame in not knowing what's going on. It's hard to keep up with this. We do it for a living, and it's still hard to keep up with it. My goal, every time I log on to TikTok, is to try to bring people along on the journey that I'm on. And as far as how I'm talking about this race specifically, democracy is counting on us. This is, I say this all the time. If you see me on TikTok, you've seen it. This is not a race about Democrats versus Republicans. This is a race about democracy versus the end of democracy. There are three reasons why we have to win this race, why Susan Crawford has to win. If Susan Crawford doesn't win, we are going to have gerrymandered maps again. And I think a lot of people have not processed that after 15 years of fighting for fair maps, we literally might only have them for a single cycle before we go right back to gerrymandered maps. And that is a horrifying notion to a lot of people. The second reason is we need our courts to recognize that elections matter. North Carolina Supreme Court has made it abundantly clear that Republican courts do not recognize the will of the voters to pick their elected officials, and we cannot afford a court that it's even in question. And the third reason is that if we lose this race, we are telling the world that democracy is for sale, that every election is for sale to the highest bidder. And I have bad news for all of us. Elon will always be the highest bidder. And that is not a world that we want to live in, one where Elon Musk gets to pick his candidate in each and every cycle moving forward. So that's my three reasons. I hope I captivated you as long as I can captivate a TikTok audience. That's yours. Take it, use it. Like, we're all in this together. Each and every one of us has to be sharing that message every single day with every person we know, because paid organizers are not going to win this thing. Susan Crawford is not going to win this thing. We are going to win this thing, and that is how we have to approach every election. It's not about the candidate at the top. It's not about the candidate's team. It's about us. We together have to save democracy, because it's us who will pay the price if we lose.
I'm sorry, I'd already scrolled to this meeting.
I lost it. Should I make a joke and bring it back?
Okay, there was a cat with a laser pointer. But anyway, no. This is the challenge that we've got, is this little device. We can use it. I think often, I really do, of Edward R. Murrow's speech from 1956, I believe it was, that, you know, he was talking about TV, but it could be just about any screen, you know, that it can educate, it can illuminate, it can inform, or it can be lights and wires in a box. And we know how often that's happened, but we still know the value of information. Information that is packaged right and presented to the people in a way that motivates them to believe in something that maybe they think is hokey, they think is maybe beneath them, politics. But these things are important. They're critical. You know this. If you're listening to this broadcast, if you're in this room at the beautiful Overture Center in here in Madison, you get the importance of this, but you all have friends, neighbors, sibling, somebody, and they reach out to you, sometimes from the voting booth. I swear it has happened to me, going, who am I voting for this thing? And whether it's that close to casting the ballot or a couple of weeks before, like we are right now, you folks are the ones who can take in information from events like this and help people truly understand that you don't just show up once every 4 years when there's a presidential election. Democracy is truly a full-time endeavor here, Dan. You need people to be as informed as we can make them, which, as you know, Josh just said, there's varying levels of how much people want to be informed, but we have to try to do our part.
Absolutely. Democracy is built from the ground up, I think, as Josh was alluding to here, and we can't take any plays off. In Wisconsin, we are over and over again, we have these everything on the line elections because that's the state of our politics. That's where we are right now. And I think for those of us, you know, in this room, those of us, you know, who have, a lot of TikTok followers, perhaps, we can really make an impact because the turnout matters so much. And so for those of you in this room, I always think of this analogy that the band The Velvet Underground only sold like 1,000 copies of their first record. But every one of those people who bought that record started their own band. So you guys are here buying that record. We need you to go out and start your own band and spread the word about this election and how important it is to the state of Wisconsin.
I like that, man. That's That's the clip I'm going to put on TikTok when this is all said and done.
You're welcome.
So this is not a polished TV production. You're going to see us just kind of walking around at times because we have one set of stairs, so we're about to have a traffic jam here as a couple of us move stage left and the members of our first panel start to come on. Todd, you can stay there.
Thank you very much.
Your knees aren't getting any
I appreciate it. A big round of applause for our folks here. And for those listening on the radio, we are going to take a one-minute break to allow the people here to set up. So if we're ready back at the old home studio across the street, as it turns out, stay with us. You're listening to Protecting Justice for All, an evening of conversations about the Wisconsin Supreme Court election on April 1st, presented by Up North News Radio here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Former Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes, he would not be negotiating with the GOP if he was Wisconsin's sitting senator.
I want to clarify, I'm always happy to negotiate in good faith, but we're talking about a party that's not acting in good faith. We shouldn't be in a position where we're throwing a life raft to somebody who is hell-bent on sinking the entire ship.
Not something I want to be involved in.
The Maggie Dawn Show. Weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Are you going to do this around other places in the state? Was the question.
Not before this election.
My name is DeMar Hamlin. I play for the Buffalo Bills, and I play safety. CPR saved my life. I've teamed up with the American Heart Association as a national ambassador to help create a nation of lifesavers, turning bystanders into lifesavers through CPR education and access to AEDs. Nearly 3 out of 4 cardiac arrests that don't happen in hospitals happen in homes. Join me to ensure everyone has the chance to live longer, healthier lives. Visit heart.org/nation.
And welcome back to Protecting Justice for All, an evening of conversations with Wisconsin Supreme about this Wisconsin Supreme Court election on April 1st. I'm Todd Alball from Civic Media. We are here as our main sponsor, the presenting sponsor of this is Up North News Radio, and of course the founder, one of the founders, Pat Kreitlow, my colleague here, who is on the air every morning from 6 until 8. You are listening to us across the Civic Media Radio Network. This is a live event, and we are down at the beautiful Overture Center here in downtown Madison, as it turns out, right across the street from our world headquarters here, and glad to have you all along, and thanks to everybody who showed up here in person. We are beginning the evening. We have a number of panels throughout the evening, so we're kind of going to reset here, and look at this. We're back from our commercial break, and we have four wonderful, fine people, and this part of the evening is a panel on public education. And this is something that's near and dear to my heart. I think this is why Pat was so kind to ask me to moderate it. I grew up in a little town called Richland Center, 5,000 people in southwest Wisconsin. My maternal grandmother started as a farm girl, and my great-grandfather didn't think girls should get an education beyond the 8th grade, and she was a bohemian and didn't think that was really great. And so she left home at 14 and ended up getting not just her high school diploma, but her college degree, and fast forward, she ended up being the first woman to be a dean in the state of Wisconsin at UW-Richland. Marge Wallace was in there. So she was a great woman and a great inspiration in my life. Both my parents, three, my stepmom, have been teachers now since retired. And my sister and brother-in-law are educators in the Eau Claire Public School District. But enough about that. I have a passion for this. That's my point. So I appreciate having all of you here. I'm going to go down the line here. Each of you give us 30 seconds to 1 minute on yourselves. A quick little introduction. Speaking of Eau Claire, ladies and gentlemen, here's a guy who started out as kind of a student and activist, and now a freshman representative in the state assembly, the one, the only, Christian Phelps, Representative Phelps. Congratulations.
Todd's brother-in-law was one of my teachers in seventh grade.
Boy, do I feel old.
I'm Christian Phelps, and I was born and raised in Eau Claire. I actually have a lot of extended family in Madison, and I worked in public schools in Wisconsin for 2 years. When I did that, it was the 2 years of my life that I lived in Madison, so familiar with both places. And I have just been really frustrated and mad about the state of affairs and the way that the state treats young people for as long as I can remember. Was 17 when Act 10 was introduced, for example, so my entire adult life has been in this sort of attack on public education world. And so eventually that led me to various different roles, including running for the state assembly last year and being elected in November.
Well, you've lowered the median age considerably. Congratulations. next up on our panel, Peggy Wirtz-Olson from WEAC.
Good afternoon, or evening, I guess it is. My name is Peggy Wirtz-Olson. I am a high school art and English teacher. I grew up in Elkhart Lake, Wisconsin. So if you're familiar with that part of the state, I am a member of the Marshfield Teachers Association, so Central Wisconsin is my home local. Hey, thanks for applauding for that. And I'm currently serving as the president of the Wisconsin Education Association Council. So I've been teaching for 27 years, so certainly lived changes within the profession in that time, and was active teacher and president of my local union when, as Christian referenced, Act 10. Happened here in Wisconsin.
Well, great. Welcome. Thank you for being here. Well, round of applause. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Next up, another great organization that I've had the opportunity to be at their events. They do great work, the Wisconsin Public Education Network. And here representing them, Heather Dubois-Bournon.
Hi, everybody. I'm Heather Dubois-Bournon. I'm executive director of Wisconsin Public Education Network. I am a public school parent and a former educator. And I kind of got radicalized by Scott Walker. And when I was working on my PhD at UW-Madison, was right around the time that Act 10 happened and the, you know, this budget-busting bill came out that just decimated school funding in this state. And at the same time, I had an outreach job at UW where I was going around to different schools around the state and seeing with my own eyes the disparities, sometimes just blocks apart, between schools that seemed to have every resource a kid could need and schools where you couldn't even drink out of the drinking fountains because there was lead in the pipes in the building. And I thought, what? How did this happen here? Who let this occur, and who's doing something about it? And so sort of looking for other people who were as mad as I was, and I found them at Wisconsin Public Education Network, and they were like, we need somebody to get us organized. And I was like, can it be me? And so we've been organizing people all over the state to just kind of tap into that frustration with those disparities and invite people who share our concerns and who agree that every single kid in every single public school deserves equal access to an equally excellent school should get that. And when the state isn't meeting its obligation, it's up to us to demand they do.
Great. Thank you for being here, Heather. Really appreciate it. Thank you very much. And last but not least, University of Wisconsin-Madison Professor Emeritus Julie Mead. Julie?
Yes, hello. My name is Julie Mead. I was born in Edgerton, but don't tell this against me. I was raised in northwestern Illinois, but always close to Wisconsin. I am the product of public education all the way through to my PhD, so it's really, really important to me. I began as a teacher of children who are deaf and hard of hearing, so special education is kind of my thing. In fact, my very first year of teaching was the first year that what is now the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act had to be implemented across the country. And so I have, as a professional, grown up with that law. And so not surprisingly, I began to study that law, and I study that law in particular, the intersection of programs for disabilities or the rights of kids with disabilities and our burgeoning kinds of school choice. So I have done quite a bit of studying around vouchers and charters. And yes, I am retired from the university, but I'm not retired from advocacy for public education.
Excellent. Thank you. All right. right. For those listening on the Civic Media Radio Network, you are listening to Protecting Justice for All, an evening of conversations about the Wisconsin State Supreme Court race election, which is, of course, April Fool's, no joke, and be a voter, as my colleague Luke Mathers likes to say. If you want to check your voter registration or to register online, go to myvote.wi.gov. That's myvote.wi.gov. Of all the things you're going to hear tonight, either in person or online, that is it right there. Be a voter and get out, because as our previous people said, that's the only way that we are all going to make a difference together. All right, we got 15 minutes. Kreitlow will have a hook. He'll pull me off of here if I don't keep you to it. So let's get right into it. Let's have a discussion. Julie, let's start with you. Okay. The big question, and anybody can hop in here. People say, Todd, why in the heck should I care about education for a Supreme Court race? What does the Supreme Court have to do from a legal perspective with education?
Well, a lot. And in fact, remember that we're voting for someone who's going to be on that bench for 10 years. So think of all of the things that can come up in a 10-year span. But we have a whole lot of things that are ripe for discussion right now that I think we need to pay attention to. In particular, I think we need to pay attention to that legislative obligation, Christian, to be funding public education, and whether or not our legislators have abdicated that responsibility. And so there's likely, I would guess, maybe not, but we want to have someone on the bench who understands that constitutional obligation and the investment that our grandparents and great-grandparents made when they crafted that constitutional obligation to fund public education so that it would be, as it says, as nearly uniform as practicable. In addition to that, of course, in 2 years, the limits of on our voucher programs will expire. And so all of the press that we currently have around school choice and some of the issues in school choice, those are likely to burgeon and become even more pressing for schools and school districts. And so that's an issue that might come up. And then, well, there are a host of others, the revenue limits, the issues of censorship, students' rights, employees' rights. So there are a whole host of things that could come up.
Representative Phelps, let's go to you next, because you can make the argument that you're the benefactor of a new Supreme Court in that this current Supreme Court redid the maps and made them fairer. You're in one of those redistricted districts. But talk for a minute. Democrats have made gains, certainly this last election. You're still in the minority in the legislature. The governor is a Democrat, obviously. But what does it mean to you as a minority member of the Assembly is trying to get something done to have a Supreme Court that's not going to legislate from the bench but actually interpret laws as are written?
Yeah. Good question. I think that the Supreme Court, as one of the three branches of government, we shouldn't lose sight of the fact that they are supposed to be a check on ours. I think they were correct to say that the legislation, the previous legislature having drawn maps to so heavily advantage their majority was not right. And so, you know, the Eau Claire area actually had some of the biggest change in our legislative maps, and where we used to have no competitive districts, we now have only competitive districts, which is how it should be. And unfortunately, the majority still holds a lot of control. And so I serve on the Assembly Committee on Education. Last session, there were about two-thirds of the Assembly was Republican and one-third was Democratic. And that was the ratio on our committees as well. But I think not many people are aware of the fact that the majority, the Speaker, still sets committee ratios no matter what the body looks like. And this year, the ratio on committees is still two-thirds, one-third, even though we are 54-45 in the body. So we are up against kind of a brick wall as minority members of the committee, where there are 9 Republicans and 4 Democrats. Stopping bills is pretty close to impossible because of the number of Republicans that we would have to get to break with their leader. And I think it's worth mentioning that Julie brings up the constitutional obligation to fund public schools, which I believe we've fallen short of for all the reasons she enumerated. Our committee has already spent 3 full taxpayer-funded days, and so far we have discussed cursive, pronouns, locker rooms, the semantics of our test scores, And not once have we discussed the special ed funding gap, the revenue limits, the voucher program, or the fact that we're $3,500 per student behind the funding levels of 2009. So we need a Supreme Court that's going to check and balance a legislature if it continues to be this bad at meeting our constitutional obligation.
Peggy, I want to go to you because from an educator's standpoint, as I said, I have family or educators, but talk to us around Wisconsin right now for a moment. As this state has a dearth, a shortage of young people going into education. And people say, why on earth would I want to go to Platteville or Milwaukee or any of our great university schools to go into education when after Act 10, as was talked about before, it's tough right now. So what does this mean having a fair court to an educator?
I think that as an educator, right, a fair court is critically important to the issues that we've all been discussing tonight. You know, one thing that I will lift up is around our students' issues and needs in the classrooms. The educator's ability to teach truth, I think, is something I want to mention tonight. And I also want to mention, you know, that real desire for an educator to be able to make ends meet at the end of the day. So you referenced, you know, going to a university, right, and the bills that come with that, and then classroom, you know, being in a classroom with our students every single day, making sure that the resources our students have are adequate and really meeting the needs of what those students in the classroom have. And at the end of the day, that we're not in this virtuous cycle of one referendum after another in our schools to keep the doors open and the lights on. So all of those issues and when I think about the students' needs in the room, every student's learning conditions are really the educator's working conditions.
And these folks are dedicated to our kids. Talk for a minute, because I think this is something that goes under talked about. I'm on live radio. I'm not as good a live person as we are on tape. But talk for a second, the real impact, because we hear Act 10, oh, they want more vacation or they want more money. No. Let's talk for a second from an educator standpoint, real families, because when Act 10 came in, what individual teachers were paying for health care, for out-of-pocket expenses, and that means educators are paying more, and in many places in our community, one spouse works for a school district, and the other spouse is a plumber, or an electrician, or a baker, or has a child care business in their home. Talk about that for a minute.
Yeah, so dollars and cents, I think, are a piece of what we're talking about tonight, and they're a piece of what is impacting every educator I talk to. Educators who have second and third jobs, and we know the work in the classroom is important in helping our students thrive and that reach, teach, and inspire that every educator wants to do is tough to do when you're working that second and third job. Mm-hmm. The erosion of healthcare benefits is something I do want to mention tonight that has been an impact, where educators' benefits nowhere even closely match up to the benefits of a part-time legislator like Christian at this point. So every educator wants to see every student in their classroom succeed. The challenge is with going into a profession where you know at the end of the day that may not be the case is a piece to what we're seeing, what we're facing. I'm going to share one brief story, and that's from a colleague of mine, a two-educator household who's about to have his first child. Last week, tearfully talked with me about their fear that they're not able to pay for childcare for a new baby in a two-educator household.
Mm-hmm. Incredible.
Those are real concerns.
And we listen to Up North News Radio from 6 to 8 every morning. Pat Kreitlow, he does a great job of telling these stories. Unfortunately, that is not a singular story. There are people like that all across Wisconsin. Heather, you're on the show so much with Pat on Up North News Radio. Always appreciate when you come on. One of the things that you bring is this experience of Wisconsin Public Education Network going all over the state. Talk for us about a second, because we know that our school districts, particularly in places where I'm from, Richland Center or Ithaca, Wisconsin, a great school district, even smaller than Richland Center, they are our communities. But public education, public school districts have to take all students by law as it is. Talk to us about what the difference between public districts face versus private districts or voucher districts.
People are often shocked to learn that when they choose to send their child to a private school on a voucher, they give up certain rights and protections for those kids. Private schools are not required, like public schools are, to meet the needs of students with disabilities. They can openly discriminate against students for any reason, and sometimes do. They can use corporal punishment. They do not have to hire licensed teachers. They don't play by the same set of rules, and kids are at risk in these environments, and we should not be using taxpayer dollars to fund any programs that put kids at risk. And so that is a huge issue for folks. The other thing that I think folks don't realize is all the opportunities that democracy already affords us to have a say in our child's education when they attend a public school. You can show up at school board meetings. You can review all curricula. You can have a relationship with your child's educator in ways that are not guaranteed to you if you send your child to a private school. And while people might make those choices for all kinds of very good reasons, if you want to protect and preserve those rights, then the choice is to go public. And that's super important. Also, people want their kids to have a thriving education. They want their schools to be joyful places where kids have all the resources they need and where educators feel valued and want to go to work because they know that they're valued by kids and by families and by communities and that everybody feels welcome and safe in our buildings. And if we aren't holding the state accountable for meeting those obligations in our public schools, then we're doing something very wrong. And so we need to prioritize those priority needs before we fool around with throwing money away in programs that are holding unaccountable to us.
All right, speed round. Kreitlow's giving me the high sign here. We got 4.5 minutes left. So short answers if we can, please. Heather, I'm going to start quickly with you. Again, rights of students. Students do have rights, quickly.
Students do have rights. And if you are concerned, like many of us are, about all of the attacks that we're seeing, both at the state level, the federal level, sometimes at the school board level, not protecting the rights of LGBTQ plus students, not protecting the rights of immigrant kids and their families, not protecting the rights of educators to teach the truth in welcoming environments. These are all things that matter deeply up and down your entire ballot, from school board to the state superintendent race to the Supreme Court race. And also, if you're sick of raising taxes on yourself to pay for public schools to be open and thriving, then and you want to shut down this system of referendum, let's hold the state accountable for funding.
Julie, let's go quickly to you on this issue of immigration, because we could do a whole evening just on that. But very quickly, Eau Claire, we had Mike Johnson, the superintendent of Eau Claire Public Schools, on the show. He's been on Pat's show before, Up North News Radio. Talk quickly, if you can, please, just why, again, a fair Wisconsin State Supreme Court could have an effect on these immigration issues and how they're handled in public education.
Well, immigration is, you know, largely a federal issue, but schools and how schools operate and how schools manage those things are state and local issues. And so understanding, of course, that all kids, regardless of where they come from, when they're in our communities, have a right, as the United States Supreme Court has said, have a right to an education and have to be welcome, valued, and taught. Mm-hmm. And so I think understanding that we have to exist in that particular situation. We have to help kids understand. And, you know, there are all kinds of heartbreaking stories right now about kids being afraid of what's going to happen when they're at school to their parents and a whole variety of things. So I think just understanding what school districts can do, but mostly how they can welcome all kids, regardless of where they're from.
Representative Phelps, 1 minute, one more minute left after that. From a legislative standpoint, again, do you have goals? Do you see any hope of working with your Republican colleagues right now, or is this a go it alone and rely on a fair court?
Both, because there's a long-term battle that we can win if we build enough political power, which we do partly through the messages that we're sending in the Capitol. Just like I represent a competitive district, so do most of my Republican colleagues. And so, for example, the voucher issue, I think for the reasons Heather mentioned, it's no coincidence that the people pushing a Christian nationalist agenda are the ones supporting school privatization. The people in the rural communities that I represent, the public school families, are alarmed and horrified to learn that they are losing funds to private schools when there isn't even a private school in those communities.
Yeah.
I think my Republican colleagues have to answer for that. And if they don't do it in this session, if we're loud enough, they will eventually.
Peggy, 30 seconds, sorry about that. From a teacher's standpoint, why is this race important to you?
Well, I hope that every voter in Wisconsin thinks about the partnership between them and their local school district in this election. I know that our students' future depends on impartial justices who will uphold the Constitution and keep our communities and our schools safe, and understand that importance for a great public education for every student in Wisconsin.
Representative Christian Phelps, Peggy Wirtz Olson, Heather Dubois Bernan, and Julie Mead, thank you all for being here. We appreciate a big round of applause. We appreciate you all being here. Education is so important, and this race matters. Be a voter on April 1st. Stay tuned now. We're going to take a quick break for those listening across the civic media on our live coverage here. We'll be back in 1 minute. You're listening to Protecting Justice for All, an evening of conversations about the Wisconsin Supreme Court election. And you're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. Folks, we've got to talk about Derek Van Orden. The second-term congressman representing Wisconsin's 3rd District is at it again, dodging public meetings and making all kinds of unhinged comments. As many scramble and struggle to understand the chaos of what's happening in Washington, D.C. and how it's impacting people here in Wisconsin, Van Orden has been as frustrating and disrespectful as ever. In one instance, Van Orden took to social media to berate a veteran who had been fired from his job at the VA by Elon Musk's Department of Government Efficiency. And the veteran in question is simply someone who was just reaching out to his congressman, looking for answers. Van Orden's office has also hastily canceled public meetings, and he has made some especially wild accusations about people who have been attending these public events. Congressman Van Orden needs to stop this unhinged madness, and more importantly, be more available and accountable to his constituents.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area and on our website at civicmedia.us. Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow.
Welcome in author Laura Ann Bird to talk to us more about what we can find in a book, or in the case of this week, a book club.
It's called a silent book club. You go to either a coffee shop or distillery or bar with a bunch of other people. You're all reading different books. You walk away from these with like great recommendations. It's sort of like a show and tell of what everyone's reading.
Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow, weekday morning 6 until 8 on your local civic media radio station and on the app.
All right, welcome back, everybody, to Up North News' first ever live event, Protecting Justice for All, as we talk about the Wisconsin State Supreme Court race election that is taking place on April 1st. We're talking primarily about the issues involved, the topics, the subjects, more so than the individual candidates. You may hear references to Judge Susan Crawford. You may hear references to Waukesha County Judge Brad Schimmel. But we really wanted to make sure that from an overarching standpoint, how does this affect life in Wisconsin in the areas that, as you just heard, might impact on education, or in this case, for our next panel, on the economy, and coming up shortly, we'll be talking about the impact on reproductive rights as well. But our second panel has taken the stage. Dan Schaefer, political editor from Civic Media and the founder of the Recombobulation Area, is joining us to moderate that panel on the impact of the Wisconsin Supreme Court election on the Wisconsin economy. Dan? It's all yours.
Thank you, Mr. Kreitlow, and thank you all for being here. Again, my name is Dan Schaefer. I am the founder of a little publication called The Recombobulation Area. Yes, it is named after the famous post-security area in the Milwaukee airport. I think with the discombobulating politics that we have in Wisconsin, we all need a place to recombobulate. So go ahead and subscribe and join us at The Recombobulation Area as we make sense of things here in the state of Wisconsin. I'm also now the political editor at Civic Media, and hello to our listeners across the state on the Civic Media Network. So, we are now less than 3 weeks away from yet another everything on the line election here in Wisconsin. So before we jump into our panel discussion, I want to see where all of you out in the audience are at with this election. So, obviously, since we're streaming live on the radio, we'll do ask you to clap instead of a show of hands here. So I want you to clap if the answer is yes. So how many of you are registered voters? Love to hear it. Love to hear it. How many of you have a plan to vote in the spring election? Who is voting early? Who is voting on election day? How many of you have already voted absentee? All right, very interesting. And how many of you are encouraging others to vote? Let me ask that one more time. How many of you are encouraging others to vote? There we go. So this panel is about the economy and the impact of this election on the Wisconsin economy. How are we all feeling about the economy right now? Maybe a little iffy? All right, so this is going to be an important panel. So we don't always think of the courts as playing a major role in the economy, but the decisions made by the Wisconsin Supreme Court have a far-reaching impact on a myriad of issues affecting things like job creation, everyday affordability, a changing climate, and justice for consumers and workers. So first, let's check in with our panel. I'm going to ask each of you to introduce yourself briefly and then answer this question. How could this election impact the economy here in Wisconsin? We'll start right here with State Representative Francesca Hong.
Good evening, everyone. I'm State Representative Francesca Hong. I represent the 76th District here in Madison. Welcome to the 76th. And what Dan said was right. Everything is on the line. And I think how this Supreme Court race is going to impact the economy, I think it's going to directly undermine and harm the care economy. And when I say care economy, I'm talking about long-term care, investing in caregivers, child care, early education, as well as paid medical and sick leave, because we do not have a workforce that works for the working family unless we have care. And if we can't pass these policies unless we have fair maps. So with a swing in the state Supreme Court, we could go back to a rigged map system where we have a majority party whose power was artificially built on rigged maps. So that's what's on the line, is care for our future, and it matters even more now because we've got an aging state, and we want to make sure that those folks are taken care of and new families have the resources they need to have success in their own home and be able to take care of themselves.
Greetings, everybody. I'm Supreme Moore Omukunde. I'm a state representative, and I represent the 17th Assembly District in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Woo-hoo-hoo. So everything that's happening at the federal level right now is probably going to end up in court at some point. One. Two, the 10th Amendment of the United States guarantees the state its rights that are not specifically taken on by the federal government. So we're going to find ourselves in state court a lot. So whoever has the majority on the Supreme Court is going to be making a lot of decisions on contracts because of executive orders that have dismissed contracts, whether they be for Inflation Reduction Act dollars and impoundment federal dollars that the Congress has determined should go to the states. We're going to end up in court over that. And so whoever has that majority on the court is going to help us determine and make a decision that's going to have a great effect on our economy.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Melissa Baldoff. I am a Democratic strategist. I am a frequent guest with Pat Kreitlow on Up North News. I do a weekly segment with him called Climate Check, where we talk about all things climate. I previously worked for Governor Evers in the administration, managing communications. And I think that I'm also, as an aside, I want to point out I am married to this lovely gentleman here, Joseph Ecke. And I will also note that we did not coordinate these outfits. the guys happened to be wearing the literal exact same jacket. And Representative Hong and I just, you know, kind of both wear black a lot. So anyway, in addition to the great points they made, I would just say our democracy is on the line with this court election. When it comes down to things like you look at the decision that came down regarding drop boxes and people being able to access their right to vote, being able to participate in the process fairly when it comes to who's getting on the ballot, when it comes to things like fake electors determining how our votes will be counted. The Supreme Court is going to make decisions like that. So really, the court is going to decide make really big decisions about our democracy, about our ability to participate in elections fairly. And so it's incredibly important that we have those fair, impartial justices making those decisions.
And I have the hardest job of all. How do you do better than your better half? I'm Joe Zepecki. I think the credential that got me on the economy panel is during President Obama's first term, I was a political appointee at the U.S. Small Business Administration, which was probably the coolest job I ever had, working with entrepreneurs, making sure they had access to capital. But I'm not going to talk about that, and I'm not going to talk about the great points that they made. I'm going to talk about the raw politics of it, because that's what I do these days. And I am here to tell you that there are certain rules of political gravity that still apply, okay? Not all of them. Mr. Trump has changed the calculus a little bit, but there are rules and laws of political gravity. And the extraordinary opportunity that we have in Wisconsin in just 2.5 weeks, 3 weeks, is to be the first voters anywhere in the United States, and we're in a battleground state, to send a message that is stop, enough. This is not what people voted for. The American people, including a lot of Trump voters, who we gotta find a way to have a conversation with, they didn't vote for an international trade war. They didn't vote for laying off tens of thousands of veterans. They didn't vote for your 401k to be taken a nosedive 50 days into their administration. And if we turn out on April 1st and we get a big win for the candidate we're all supporting, that isn't just good for the next 10 years in Wisconsin, it sends a message to people in Washington, like I don't know some Republican congressman who could use a spine to say you are losing the American people. That's what's at stake, and that to me gets right to the heart of the economy.
Thank you to all of our panelists here. So elections for Wisconsin Supreme Court are kind of weird, right? You want to ask these candidates their thoughts and their views on the issues, but oftentimes they'll retreat back to these themes of impartiality or not wanting to judge a case before it's before them, etc. But at the same time, it's becoming increasingly clear that voters want to know this type of information. In the latest Marquette University Law School poll, 79% of registered voters said judicial candidates should discuss issues on the campaign. But for many voters, they don't have a clear idea of what the candidates stand for. For Brad Schimmel, the poll showed that about half of registered voters either don't know what he stands for or haven't heard enough, and that number is up at about 60% for Susan Crawford. So what have you heard from candidates in this election that tells you how they might rule on these economic issues that you all just talked about as being important in this race, if and when they're seated on the bench? Melissa, let's start with you.
Okay. I'll tell you the thing that I heard that tells me the most about one of these candidates, and it's Brad Schimmel. And what I heard him say is that he needs some knee pads to go beg for money from donors. And what that tells me about Brad Schimmel is that he is for sale to the highest bidder. And we already know that when he was Attorney General, he refused to take action against pharmaceutical companies and hold them accountable for what they have done to devastate communities across Wisconsin and across the country, wrecking communities with the opioid crisis and this epidemic that has impacted virtually every single family. He refused to hold them accountable. At the same time, he took thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars from this industry. So we know that he is for sale to the highest bidder, by his own admission, he is wearing out knee pads left and right, talking about he has to go to Menards and buy them in bulk. So we know from by his own admission that he's for sale. So that's what I'm hearing that tells me a whole lot about where he stands.
Representative Mauro Mukunde.
Thank you. I know you mentioned that they just talk about impartiality and things of that nature. However, I think like things like impartiality and commitment to judicial principles and jurisprudence, those are important things. Right now we have folks at the federal level who are not committed to that at all. We're going to be in a constitutional crisis with many of the executive orders that have been administered and whether or not they impose upon the freedoms and the rights of the legislative branch. We need somebody who is going to be impartial. We need somebody who is going to look at the rules of jurisprudence and judicial principles. And Brad Schimel's not that guy, unfortunately. And if we have somebody on that court, we're already looking at people who are saying, oh, just wait till April 1st. After April 1st happens, we can get our old maps back. After we get our old maps back, we can go back to the gerrymandered state of Wisconsin, and we can have the 3-1 margin, and we can override any of the governor's vetoes that we want. We need to have someone who is going to be judiciously principled in the seat and on the court, the highest court in the state of Wisconsin, to help us kind of determine what some of these laws are going to be in the state of Wisconsin after they come through our courts and come down from the federal government as well.
You're listening to WAUK Jackson, Milwaukee, WMDX Columbus, Madison, WGBW Green Bay, WISS Oshkosh, WZBU New Holstein, WLCX La Crosse, and WBZH Hayward.
Investing in this race to try to influence it. And guess who's going to have business before this court regarding Tesla? If you guessed Elon Musk, you're right. So what do you think he might expect in exchange for his investment? Because we saw what he's getting in exchange for his investment in the presidential race, which is unfettered access to the federal government and the ability to dismantle it at his will.